Prisons are big business. But if there's one thing that can make a bunch of murderers your hero protagonists, it's big business. And as big business is wont to do, it ships dozens of men to an island to fend for themselves. It's Lord of the Flies with murderers and nice handmade circular floor rugs, but it's not even televised, proving that even in the future, big business is still run by a bunch of overpaid dingleberries. Welcome to Yesterday's Tomorrow Today and the past future world of Martin Campbell's No Escape.
Welcome to an all-new episode of Yesterday's Tomorrow Today, a show about movies whose futures have passed. I am one of your hosts, Joey Reinisch.
I'm Kyle McVeigh.
And joining us today, we have special guest, my boss and your boss, Mr. Vince Gilligan. How's it going,
hello.
Sir?
It's going really well. I'm glad to be on your podcast. I feel very flattered to be here. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thank you so much for doing this. And I would just like to say before we get going here, Vince did pitch some Stone Cold classic movies to do, Blade Runner 2001, and then he threw out a little movie called No Escape, and we knew right then and there that that was going to be the movie that we would have him on to talk about.
Yes.
1994, directed by Martin Campbell of GoldenEye, Vertical Limit, Casino Royale fame, starring Ray Liotta in his most beautiful eyes I've seen in a long time.
He's looking good in this. Post Goodfellas.
Yeah. He did Goodfellas and then No Escape.
Yeah, incarceration, it's good. Apparently good for the skin or something.
I think this is a direct continuation of Goodfellas.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I believe so.
Lance Hendrickson as Father Hawkins, Ernie Hudson. Yeah, this is quite the cast.
Lance Hendrickson is one of my favorite actors of all time. No one looks like him. No one sounds like him. He immediately brings a gravitas to everything that is sometimes unnecessary, but he just by his mere presence, I love him.
A lot of gravitas to a guy in an all men's prison they call father.
He is great. Place. I got to write for him one time. He was an episode of The X-Files, and I'm sorry, that was the one and only time. I mean, hopefully there'll be more chance in the future, but he's a fine actor, and he's a good guy, too. And
he's still working, all the time, still working. I was going to say, I'm trying to remember, because I was a huge fan of Millennium when he was that the Millennium crossover episode or
Exactly. Okay. I didn't work on Millennium, but I would always go to the kitchen of the Millennium writer's office and steal food and hang out with those guys a little bit. But that was an episode written by Frank Spotness and John Scheiben and myself, episode of The X-Files called Millennium. And it was the last episode we did that aired before 1999 turned into 2000. And I think Millennium was over. The show Millennium was over at that point, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That show was wild.
Very cool. So we were talking a little bit before we recorded, and I don't know how widely known the plot of No Escape is. So maybe we'll spend a little bit longer than usual, kind of giving a rundown for people at home who may not have seen this. Just roughly what the plot is of this movie before we jump into its future, a lot of which is kind of extracted from throwaway lines in scenes from us.
Yeah.
What's happening outside of this island.
I was going to say, this is not a movie. I had weirdly never even heard of this movie before Vince suggested it. And it's wild to watch it, like we were saying, with this cast. And it's a Martin Campbell movie, which, I mean, trying to think of what he had done before. I mean, maybe this is him on his kind of come up. It just is odd that this is something I had never even seen on TBS in an afternoon or
it
something like
feels
that.
Feels like a TBS type of movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I recognize the poster. I had seen it before, but I'd never seen the movie until two nights ago.
Yeah. But Vince, you had seen it. Did you say you had seen it in the theater?
Yeah, I saw it at the movie theater, the old Chesterfield Mall movie theaters in Richmond, Virginia, Chesterfield County, right outside of Richmond. Saw it in a matinee showing, I think, by myself with not that many other people in the theater. But this is not my favorite movie of all time, but this is, it kind of stuck with me, I have to say. And when I realized it took place story-wise in 2022, last year, that tickled me. And Martin Campbell, I think, is a very, I think you're right, Kyle. I think the year after he did No Escape, he did Goldeneye, his first of two James Bond movies. And I think then after that, he did Zorro and he did Casino Royale. I think he's kind of an underrated director. I think he's a really good action director. The opening of Casino Royale, it's astounding. All that parkour stuff, that is just, my wife Holly dragged me to see Casino Royale when it came out because I was like, there's only Sean Connery. And then, and by the end of that sequence, and a lot of the credit goes to Daniel Craig, but a lot of the credit goes to Martin Campbell. By the end of that sequence, I said, this is the best James Bond ever. I think this guy is the best James Bond ever. It was just like, holy shit. And a lot of that credit's got to go to Martin Campbell, I think.
So. No, absolutely. Well,
And the writer.
Obviously, the writer. We love
Paul Haggis.
Yes, he's amazing. Yeah. It's interesting that he's twice gotten to reset the Bond franchise. But yeah, the impressive thing about Casino Royale for me is especially that opening sequence. That's so modern and of the time. Like, as a director, that feels like you're kind of pushing yourself to like do something that you haven't really done before. It's very cool. I love that movie a lot.
Yeah. I'm not really up on my James Bonds.
You haven't seen Casino Royale?
I haven't seen most James Bonds.
But it has Hannibal in it.
Well, this is also goes back to Vince pitching Blade Runner, which I also haven't seen. But Vince, I have now seen No Escape.
Okay, so you're only into shitty movies? What does that say about you as an editor?
It's studying of like, you know, this is what doesn't work.
Shitty movies, how does that help you as an editor?
I'm guessing most of the time. It just happens to work.
And No Escape is not a shitty movie, but you had not seen Blade Runner, right?
I've not seen Blade Runner, no.
It's one of those things that, I mean, maybe I like a bad movie. I enjoy it. I think you can learn as much about the trade, writing, editing, directing, from what not to do as what to do.
But if that's your only baseline, do you know?
Yes.
I think you need to know what to do and what not to do.
So yeah,
you can only have what not to do.
To your point, I've seen Greasy Strangler. I do watch both sides of the spectrum. So I know what to do and what not to do.
So you know what high art looks like, Greasy Strangler, dude.
So don't worry. I have my filmic education under lock. So
oh, absolutely.
So let's talk about this island, the island that you cannot escape from, Absalom. Absalom. So there's a very brief section of intense future world that we're going to get where we're riding this electric monorail through what looks like Mars, through this very dusty future place with a massive, massive prison.
Yeah.
And then shortly thereafter, we're going to go to this island where it's just kind of like off in the jungle and there aren't any future anything. But this like first 15 minutes, we're going to get a lot of future.
You get some future. You get future prison stuff. I guess we should just say, like, plot wise, I will just lay it out there really fast. This is about stars Ray Liotta. He plays a former, I think, Marine who kills a superior officer. He gets put into the big hook of this universe, which is that there is an international prison system, whatever that may or may not mean. And then he goes to a maximum security prison, is too much of a bad boy. Gets sent to a secret island prison that is basically Lord of the Flies, but with grown men. and falls in with there are two warring factions, and he falls in with the group that is trying to create a society as opposed to the gentlemen that are, I don't know, just trying to Mad Max it, I guess.
Yes.
But that's the gist of it.
That was well laid out. Yeah, it's a world where private prisons are. It's a big giant private corporation running this prison, and you know, in the first 10 minutes, you see the Supermax prison, which you take the secret monorail to.
Yeah,
and he is so bad at the Supermax prison that he gets sent to Absalom, the island that used to be a resort island. It used to have a resort hotel that the outsiders, two factions, outsiders and insiders. The outsiders live at the ruined old resort hotel. But you get to Absalom, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'd die if I was this guy without Ray Liotta's character skills. I'd be dead like in 30 seconds. But I'd rather die on this island than in that fucking prison. Like, they send him from the world's worst place to the world's second worst place. So dramatically speaking, it's like, at least you're in this beautiful island, even though everything on it's going to kill you.
I mean, I would immediately get eaten by the rats, which teleport onto him.
I was going to say, that's spawn onto his body.
They all of a sudden spawn on him. But yeah, I would immediately be murdered by rats. But for me, it's kind of this funny thing where he goes to the level 6 security, maximum security prison, and they're like, you know what will really punish you? You get to go to Resort Island.
To an island vacation.
It's like, I guess, is that... It feels like Secret Island Prison is the better prison system for me.
It's prettier. It's got nice flowers and waterfalls and stuff. But
I'd imagine it's also cheaper to shoot an island than like a big building that is a maximum security future prison.
Yeah, it's like, but you know, I guess you get fed though. You get fed and maybe you get a shower and whatnot in the first prison. So
right.
Depends on how you look at it, I guess.
Depends on what you think the luxuries of living are. You know, is it breathing fresh air and seeing sun, or is it washing your ass once in a while?
And getting a shot of penicillin every now and then.
There you go. That's the big thing, right? There's antibiotics.
So, I can't remember the warden's name.
Warden.
Michael Lerner, who's a fine actor.
Once again,
a year or two ago. Yeah, good actor.
Once again, great cast. Top to bottom, not a woman among them, but a great cast.
Not a single woman in this movie, not even a woman's voice, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think there's a single woman in this whole movie.
I looked at the IMDb trivia for this movie, and that was one of the trivia. It was like, not one female within this entire film. I was like, yeah, there isn't.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Well, Warden's, I don't even, pet project, I guess, is to ship people like Ray Liotta to this island prison that he's trying to keep secret.
Yes.
He's trying to keep it secret by surrounding it with 24/7 surveillance of ships and keeping it off of radars. But the intro text scrawl talks a lot about, Kyle, is that on here?
The year 2022, the international prison system is operated by private corporations. Criminals from all over the world are exploited at profit. Prisons have become big business. So my assumption, and I, from what Vince said earlier, I think he had a similar assumption. It sounds like it is one big international system where they're kind of like trading prisoners around the world, I guess, depending on the severity of their crimes. And then each prison is maybe run by a different corporation. It seems like that's the system.
And to that end, though, how do you make money off a secret island prison?
I think I can explain that.
Okay, good.
I'm so happy. I'm just making this up. I didn't read this anywhere. I'm just.
It's just as much canon.
I was convinced you get the show. This is all we do.
This is. To me, the way privatized prisons work, I did a little Wikipedia research this morning on privatized prisons. They probably existed even before the end of the Revolutionary War, but it says on Wikipedia they kind of started up because England no longer had colonies to send, or it didn't have America after the end of the Revolutionary War to end to send its prisoners to. So they started putting them on hulks, which were ships that couldn't sail, and they'd be, that the privatization began, and Australia, where they shot this movie, started privatized prisons in 1990, and then the UK in 92. We have them here, and the way they all seem to make money is that the government of wherever the privatized prison is pays per capita, you know, a daily rate per prisoner. So. So my theory is that big Supermax prison in the middle of the Martian desert, it looks like, with the monorail service and the helicopters constantly hovering over it, that cost a lot of money to build and maintain. Mm-hmm. But if you find a little island somewhere that used to be like Club Med in the middle of nowhere, you know, with the and you can send a bunch of your worst guys there, you're not spending as much of your profits on those particular 600 or 700 guys, but you're still charging, and it's a secret because you're still charging, you know, the U.S. government or the Australian government or whatever. Yeah. You're still charging them the per capita rate. That's my best guess. But then taking it a step further, why not just kill all these guys, period, instead of, you know. But
wait,
I don't
for them
think
to do
they're
it?
Feeding them. Yeah, well, that's that part. I don't know. Maybe it's a little wiggly there.
It's a little wiggly. For sure.
I mean, it makes more sense than my thought, which was he's trying to set up a reality show that he's just not quite ready to unveil yet. Because the fact that this island isn't broadcast and everybody knows about it is crazy. Like this is Truman Show ready. As any other prison island I've ever seen.
This is a pilot for him, is what you're saying. Is he's building up to shoot a reality pilot of Prisoner Island.
You already have two factions. You have the good side, the bad side. They even have camps, so you set up all your cameras around.
They're visually distinct from one another, which is great. That's helpful.
They both look ridiculous.
But in very different ways.
Yes.
Some of them look like a yoga retreat. Other ones look like, I don't know what they're doing, but they're having a great time.
They're wearing straw. Go ahead.
Straw hats. The straw hats. Or the straw armor.
That does like nothing. Every knife, every bow and arrow, every shot, every punch just goes right through that straw armor. It like does nothing other than like looks like it's
uncomfortable. You don't think the wooden samurai hats work at all?
There is an interesting visual idiom to this movie. It's an interesting, you know, to me, this movie is—it's kind of like it's Mad Max crossed with Papillon. It really reminds me of the movie Papillon. But then those are the outsiders, which is the band led by Merrick, the character played by Stuart Wilson,
the most charismatic man on the island.
He's so good. He's an actor, as a villain. He's so good.
He's fun. He's fun. I like his performance.
I interrupted your thought. I'm sorry, Vince. Go ahead. Continue.
It's just to me that's the not to ding on the costume design or any of that, but I really think if the costume design made a little more sense. I mean, I guess it kind of, you could say, well, it kind of makes sense, but it's the costume design kind of telegraphs the good guys versus the bad guys.
Yes.
The bad guys look like, you know, they wandered into Club Med from the set of Mad Max. And then the bad guys, like you said, you guys nailed it. It's kind of a little bit like a yoga retreat that Gilligan and the skipper would have built on Gilligan's Island out of bamboo.
I think it tracks with the other stuff we see in the good guys society, which is They're trying their best to make it seem like they are still free.
Yeah.
And they wear clothes that they've made that are functional but still have some aesthetic to them.
Yeah.
They weave their own circular floor rugs.
Which I love that.
Which is very important to survival on the island. Like, they don't have great weapons or great armor, but they have the nicest circular handmade floor rugs.
They're soft men with soft armor. Okay. It makes sense.
It's like all aesthetic and nothing practical. It's like we want to look like We are not on a prison island. Have you seen our floor rug? There's something about that floor rug that, like,
You're so locked in on the floor rug.
It was the first time they meet King, and he's in there, and he's, like, you know, getting changed and, like, being all frou-frou-y. And then there's, like, this giant circular floor rug in the middle. I'm like, they had to make that.
They had to spend
the resources and the time. There's
so much time, though.
to make their own floor rug. And it's because that part of the prisoners on the island wants, they're trying to start a new society and be like civilized.
Sure.
And then they have that other half that's just like, we're just going to take whatever you are doing, whatever you have, and we're going to take it back to Mad Max land.
Yeah.
Where every other person wears tiny little goggle things on their eyes.
I love the look of all of the outsiders. It's so good.
They look like Waterworld postmen. Ruffians.
As you locked in on the rug, in the back half of, in the last little battle, there is a man, I put it in the rundown because I can't forget about it, but there's a man that's just wearing a fencing mask that he has painted like mascara and like a woman's face on, and I think that's the raddest shit I've ever seen. I think that's awesome.
What's his job on the island? Let's keep him alive.
Vince, I think we know what his job is. All right. I think his job is the oldest job, and I think it's a lot of those guys' job. I imagine
that's the kissing boy.
I know.
Well, that's why you have the fencing mask.
Yeah, if you get a good haul, you get to spend 10 minutes with the kissing boy.
The kissing boy. I love him.
So there's two factions: the insiders and the outsiders. Led by Father, who is Lance Henriksen, as this sort of almost like deity to these people. He's a protector. He wants everyone to be safe. He wants to establish a new sort of order. And then on the outside, we have Merrick, who may or may not be his actual son. I'm not sure.
I didn't get that.
This is good because we've kind of read it both ways, because Father is what he goes by, but Merrick multiple times calls him dad,
I think.
But he may just be like taking the piss on like what his people calling him father.
Yeah.
Well, it's like the 52-year-old guy and his 59-year-old dad.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. It doesn't make sense. But the first time I watched it and I did the run, Joey asked me that. And I was like, no, not at all. And then I watched it again yesterday, and I was like, is he, though? Because there's at some point where they go and attack on Christmas Eve, and I'm not entirely sure what the motive for that attack is beyond just raiding, but before that attack, he's like, I'm about to make it personal. And then he goes and kind of says the dad stuff, and it's just not clear. There's some stuff in here that's a little muddled. They didn't go for clarity. And it's a little weird. And that's one of those things where I don't think they are father, son, but they don't do anything to clarify that. If he's just taking the piss out of him, or just like they are. Because that, I feel like if they are that, they should have really focused in on that relationship a little bit more, because that's interesting.
And I think it's just him being like a smarmy asshole.
It probably
being like,
is.
Hey, dad.
I think so. Yeah,
you know, like, instead of saying father, call
him
dad or daddy.
So, but the first time that I watched, I went through, and that is, I was like, oh, this is like a father son fight thing.
Yeah.
That's why he keeps messing with them, and then realized kind of by the end of the movie, I was like, I don't think that's the case at all. Yeah. So I watched most of the movie with a completely different character backstory.
A whole new layer.
Yeah. But I want to go back to something Vince said, like right when we started, which was you'd be dead 10 minutes after landing on this island.
Yeah. Oh, good. I would be. Yeah.
I would prefer it. There's got to be other people here. I feel like more than just those two factions, that is a big island.
Yeah.
And I think there's got to be pockets of other people on this island kind of doing their own thing, because there's no tracking, really. There's no, like, they're not watching over anything. So, Vince, you land on the island. You get your personal helicopter drop off one prisoner at a time, which is not expensive at all. You get dropped onto the island.
Feels so cheap in the future.
Yeah. You fight off the teleporting rats.
Yeah.
And then you get you're free to do whatever you want. Like, mm-hmm. where do you go instead? What is your plan then? If you're not going to go jump in with the outsiders, you're not going to go with the insiders and hang out with Father.
Yeah.
What kind of group are you starting? What kind of island posse are you going to gather? What is your mantra? Are you going to go live by the beach? You going to go?
Huh. I mean, I'm not that much of a survivor. I'd either have to paint
I'm already done.
To look like a woman, or I'd have to.
Yeah.
Nah, but
you're,
like,
you're looking for the highest cliff.
Listen, I got to tell you, this is, you know, here in 2023 with, you know, in a penicillin and, you know, enough bourbon in my pantry. And even then I'm like, you know, do I really want to keep going? You know, I just like, I guarantee you, I wouldn't be trying hard to survive. That was the thing, not to digress too much, but I remember on The Walking Dead, they had an episode, mm-hmm. they had a character who said, I'm done. And she blows herself up and explodes. She allows herself to. And I remember thinking, now that's the way to go. I mean, it's just like, what is the point? You know, it's survival against all costs.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think there is a point for many people.
Yeah.
And to continue the race and all of that. But mm-hmm. for a big chunk of folks, I don't know if this is evolutionary, I don't know what, but it's just like, what, you know, fuck it, you know? I want to finish this bottle of bourbon that I wash up on the beach, and then I'm going to jump off a cliff or something. I don't know. If I live that long to find a bottle of bourbon that I washed up on the beach.
I think if you start immediately, you'll probably find one or something. Yeah, maybe a toilet wine or something.
Or you know, just start eating random foliage. Like, one of these things is bound to get
one of them will kill me.
Up.
I'm definitely going to eat a poison mushroom at some point. That's fine. I would agree. I think about... We've done a lot of post-apocalyptic movies on this show, and I always am sort of in the back of my mind. I'm like, but why? Why do you keep going? Like, why do you, like the Road Warrior? Like, why? Why would you do that? What are you doing? Just kind of like cling to what you have, and then when it's time, just go. I mean, peacefully.
We talked about that with Tom about how none of us are survival types.
Like,
this is not our forte, but I think... At some point, for me, it would be like, well, fuck you. I'm not going to let you, like, take all my stuff.
Okay, yeah.
You know, it's more like, I don't want to survive. I just don't want my non-survival to make it easier for you.
Yeah, sure.
At some point. Because then you at least have a thing to focus on.
Yeah.
And it's spite. Not survival, it's spite.
You're talking about focusing on hatred and spite.
Which is like a primary motivator for me. So
spite keeps you going. Spite will prolong the race. You know,
right. You
have enough spite until you get to breed, and then
then the cliff.
I built a career on foiling the haters. You know, same thing. I will say that I likely would die, but if I did want to survive, I think I'd go two ways. Mm. One, lovable hermit, wise, wizened.
So the you one both build sides a myth- go to?
Yeah, you want to build a mythology, right?
Yeah,
you want to become something more than a man, a Batman, if you will, an idea. But I would just love to be like, I just want to fish, live in my cave, slowly kind of go crazy, maybe start to leave mysterious markings around for them to find, and then eventually let them come to me and kind of build this. Maybe I'm not saying it's a cult, but a cult would be pretty good here.
I mean,
I think there's a lot of room to build a religion and a lot of room that these guys, neither of these guys are used. Like, the Father feels like Lance Henriksen should be out there
preaching.
Yeah. Like, letting these guys really become zealots and, like, lifting him up. It's a missed opportunity.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea.
So, Kyle, you'd be the uncle. You'd be, like, the crazy uncle.
Yes, that's my...
Because they already have a father, so you'd be, like, the uncle.
I mean, that's basically how I live my life right now with all of my friends' children. It's like, oh, yeah, Uncle Kyle, there he is. Go, I don't know, beat the shit out of him for a little while. Go.
Put the nice toys away. Uncle's here. But
how did the insiders, how did those guys all wind up in prison? because when they land in this place, they are weaving their circular rugs and and they're looking like, you know, their yoga, you know,
and they all seem so soft.
How did they wind up in prison? They seem, and then they put that one guy out to die. So they have a little bit of a backbone there. But
they got an edge to, well, it's Kevin Dillon did a kidnapping.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid,
like,
and the kids
proxy.
Died.
Yeah,
and then
he was the driver.
What's his name? The guy that's like their kind of mechanic guy. He built a bomb that killed 50 people.
Right.
So people have done real shit. Yeah. I think my thing that's interesting is beyond even that. It's like, what do you do to get sent to the island? Like, is it like you said, Vince? Is it just like a numbers thing where they're just like, some of these guys are just kind of a pain in the ass and we can just sweep them out and still get more money and bring new people in? Or is it like, I don't know. Does someone arrive there and immediately they're like, I don't know, you're island. Like, you're going to island. I'm so sorry. Like, did Merrick show up and like be an asshole?
We don't have this character on the island yet. We got to get him to the island. We don't have a Merrick yet.
I don't have a great answer to that. I will say, however, in the defense of this movie, it moves fast.
It does move fast.
It does. So this movie doesn't give you a lot of time. You know, only afterward do you think, well, you know, why would you have in this enclosed Supermax prison, why would you carry an RPG? Why would the guard carry an RPG that if he, with one shot, but then if he fired it, it would destroy the whole
everybody.
Yeah.
That is a good late game reveal too.
You bring up a good point, Vince, because this is kind of what I love about this type of movie. Like, I would say, I'd say this is like a solid B movie. Like, there was, you know, something just kind of fell through the cracks. Like, there's great cast. Like, they clearly gave a budget to it, but just like it didn't quite come together for it to like really rise above its station the way that they wanted. Like, all intentions, all the talent is there, but it just didn't come together. And I love a movie like this because often the good one,
podcast.
One does this, but then the other thing is often the good ones are, like you said, Vince, they're just move at breakneck pace. And like, as long as I will watch a movie like this all the time, as long as you're just not boring. Like if you entertain me and I can shut off and we can, and I can get from beginning to end without asking the big questions, and then for an hour afterwards talk about all the big questions, I find that great. This is like it's a successful film to me in that regard, for sure.
It's the credits roll, and you're like,
why was that explosion so big?
Wait a minute.
That was it. And how did Merrick survive that explosion when he was at the center of it all?
You
gotta ask yourself that.
I was rewatching. Go ahead. Yeah. Sorry, Vince.
I agree completely. It's the great Frank Capra quote. There are many sins in filmmaking, but the cardinal sin is dullness. And, you know, just along. I mean, this thing moves. And it's got, and actually, I would argue, it's got some, you know, the yoga mats and the yoga clothes, the yoga retreat look, all that stuff is, you know, that kind of distracts from. It's got an interesting message. The idea of atoning for one's sins. There are certain moments in this movie that it is interesting to me in large part because it's kind of neither fish nor fowl. It's kind of a you know, an old Saturday matinee type movie.
Yeah.
Except in the modern era, you know, back when they made this, like the underbill on a Saturday matinee, except it's shot in the modern age with a higher budget. It's got a great cast, but it's kind of a pulpy kind of potboiler type thing. And yet it's got some good ideas that rise above the type of movie that it is in this idea of atonement. And, but then it's got, and Stuart Wilson's a really good actor, but he's
so
really,
good.
Really, he's just chewing the scenery so much. And then Lance Henriksen is so grounded. Mm-hmm. These guys are in completely different movies.
Yes.
I mean, it's just, this movie is really interesting that it wind up being all these disparate pieces.
I think that's my biggest thing and why it feels that. Joey and I were talking about this before you hopped on the Zoom, is like, tonally, these camps are completely different. And I want to watch both of those movies.
Would you want to watch it at 8 p.m. Tuesdays on CBS?
At the reality show?
The reality
yeah.
show Island, of where course these two I do. Disparate camps?
For 3 hours yeah. every Tuesday, of yeah. course. But I think you're
Don't
right.
Don't forget to vote.
Like, it's Merrick is like an all-time... At just like straight up action movie villain. Like I would love to watch that movie with him chewing the scenery, showing up, and like heroes that kind of meet him in that tone. And then I also want to watch the Insiders movie, where it is a meditation on your past sins and atonement and what that means and can you even find it and things like that. That's very interesting. But it is in this movie, you're kind of, it's the constant whiplash where yeah. anytime they come back to Merrick, he's doing just some buck wild shit and just cracking wise. And then it swings back to Lance Henriksen, just like downcast, his craggy face, just like giving a monologue. And you're like, you are both so good at what you're doing and it doesn't make sense.
And they're two separate movies.
Yes.
You get two movies for the price of one. What's not
That's right.
I mean, yeah.
I mean, that's why this thing's 2 hours.
Why does he have a guillotine? Why does he have a guillotine in a hidden away room? I mean,
yeah, put that up front.
The part of the way Merrick runs his business here, he stays in charge, I think, yeah. amongst all these maniacs, these road yeah. warrior guys. He stays in charge by scaring them and yes. by having this rocket gun that could blow them all up. Although
I think it's
that.
The piercings. I think the piercings is how he stays in charge.
Of course.
I think it's, but it's also, it's like he keeps them entertained. Like
yeah.
he
yeah.
cuts the guy's head off and the tattooed guy goes, and then the guy's head falls. Yes. I love the way they did that. The guy, they
so good.
Painted a line on his neck and he rolls his yes. head back and then they
hard cut.
And then but it was, that was fun. That's the old yeah. school way of doing it. I like that. But yeah. But if you're gonna be Merrick, who keeps his leadership by being intimidating, but also by being entertaining, which is maybe yes. even more important, why would you keep your guillotine in a locked away room and not cut Kevin Dillon's head off or you know or whoever he's gonna you know
yeah.
Why not do that?
Why make a day of it?
Make a big, you know, dance around the maypole, cut the guy's head.
Yes.
Or whatever.
Just, no, yeah. you're right. It does feel like it's an event because he does have that little saw torture device that he puts Kevin Dillon on. And that's entertaining for a while. But yeah. then he does do the public fight to the death. And that's yeah. the pizzazz that you come to expect from Merrick. Like,
yeah.
that's
why
the
he's
dash.
In charge.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's
exactly.
yeah. He gives you something to do on an afternoon, something to look forward to. But yeah, why not make it an event? It's like, oh, we did the fight. Kevin Dillon's dead. And then it's like, you know what's a bonus, guys? I'm going to give you food from the supply drop, and we're going to behead this other dude.
I told it, and I messed up the plot. But Kevin, you're right. Kevin Dillon was already dead. They yeah. take Ray Liotta in.
Yeah.
And Ray Liotta is the most interesting, from Merrick's point of view, Ray Liotta yeah. is the most interesting guy on the island.
By far.
So, but why take him into this room to lop his head off and then leave before the head gets lopped off? That's one of those moments where I wish they had done like, one more go around with the script there, you know, one more draft. Because yeah. that was where, okay, we're going to cut off. It was just, it's all about giving Ray Liotta a chance to escape
right.
and to have the guy who's the inside man
yeah.
present himself.
I
want to talk about Kevin Dillon real quick.
Yeah.
So this was a question
Johnny
I wrote.
Drama?
Yeah, Johnny Drama himself. I wrote it down. So Johnny Drama, Kevin Dillon, is a character who immediately becomes obsessed with Ray Liotta.
Yes.
And just like wants to be his friend.
Yes.
So much. Would you have needed that much convincing to stab him in the pit? No, you gotta kill me. You can take care of it.
You're like, yeah, all right.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you insist.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, like you're worthless here. Like you got caught four times in like 5 minutes. Yeah, you know, you're right.
You're right.
I don't know. I kind of like him, though. He's likable, Kevin Dillon's character.
He's very likable.
Yeah,
the fact that they don't kiss... when they are that close together, yeah. I could not believe it.
Yeah.
It, like when he's like, I thought we were friends. I know. And they're like this, like nose to nose.
Just
almost.
Give him one smooch
Just
on the
give,
way out.
That's all he wanted. You have to kill him later. You should have, before you kill him in the pit, just.
Yeah.
Well, did he kill that part? Because it was a lot. It was a, you know, yeah, it was a quick editing.
There's six movies happening right there. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, did Kevin Dillon kind of stab himself?
He did. He like actually. Yeah. He like jumps onto his spear.
Yeah,
is right, what he does. Right. Yeah. So right, he didn't even. He wasn't even convinced to kill him. Yeah.
Would you have needed that much convincing, though?
No,
this dude, probably not. This dude is, like, following you and blowing up your spot. You're like, I am going to this camp to do a lot of murdering. Have you killed a single person? And, like, the last time he almost killed a single person, he, like, froze.
Yes.
And it almost got other people killed. And then he still followed him anyway.
Joey, how does the movie happen if that doesn't happen?
So the movie can happen. So the scene would have been better if it was, here's what you got to do. You gotta kill me because.
Yes! Like, you just see Ray Liotta being like, yeah, yeah.
You don't need to explain it to me. I get it.
No, we get it. We get it. Yeah, yes. You're very weak. Yes, we get it. Yeah, I gotta make it out of here. I can do something. Yeah. I have a distributor.
Which, well, let's talk about the distributor because there is no escape from this island. But they're still going to try.
Well, that's what they say. I mean, they put it in the title. Right. That's how much they believe that.
So there is a. And I don't remember the character's name, a machinist who is making an escape vessel that they keep trying to get away from the island. And it's like insulated against the ships surrounding the island, the sort of extra security. They're thinking
it's like a stealth boat.
Yeah, it looks like a canoe upside down that they're.
It's a stealth canoe.
And supposedly it's not going to be picked up by their tracking.
Yeah.
So that character, I think, actually had one of the better scenes in the movie where he's like, are you on the next boat that's going to try? And he's like, that's where he talks about, I built the bomb that killed all these people. Yeah. I'm right where I'm supposed
to
be.
Once again, that different movie. Yeah. That's also very good.
But I thought that scene was great because he's the only one there who's like, no, like I messed up.
I wish I had written him down. He's very good in this. I really, really like that character.
Yeah. So they make their first boat and it gets, you know, a couple hundred yards out, but there's this, they call it the kill line, which is 5 kilometers away from the island, is supposedly completely surrounded.
Yeah.
And if they can make it past that, they think they'll be home free. And the boat kind of gets there, but then still gets blown up. But Ray Liotta now, his entire purpose is to get this machinist whatever he needs so that he can build another version of the boat that he thinks will make it next time.
Mm-hmm.
That is our sort of thrust for Ray Liotta to go back to the outsider camp to start messing them up, to keep them away from the insider people, to get off this island. Because as it turns out, Ray Liotta is in jail for killing a commanding officer who essentially ordered him to carry out a mission that ended up with the deaths of like a bunch of women and children and a bunch of innocent people.
And where was he? It was somewhere very. You
know, that's interesting. Yes, he was. And it happened story wise in Benghazi, Libya.
Yes,
Benghazi.
In 2011.
Yes.
Story wise, and in real life in 2011, there was the tragedy happened in with the American embassy, I think.
Yeah.
Would that have happened without this movie?
No, absolutely not. This movie made that happen.
A chicken before the egg situation here.
So it's, and I will say to the filmmaking of this, that very first opening shot I thought was so good, where it's the entire credits of the opening.
Oh, it's very cool.
Is just watching these soldiers march by these guys standing at attention. And then all of a sudden, right at the end, one of them breaks and goes and shoots the general. I thought that was such a like awesome opening.
Once again, different movie. So good.
That really is. I'm sorry. I keep interrupting.
No. We're on a weird delay. We know. I was just going to say it is like it makes you feel like you can kind of see the moments where Martin Campbell is like pushing and pulling and like trying to kind of make his a little bit more artsy, interesting version. And he keeps getting kind of pulled back into action land, which he also does well, as we said. But it's like. It does. You feel that struggle throughout this.
Ray Liotta's whole purpose, then, he says, is he wants to escape, not because he's innocent. He definitely shot this commanding officer in the face.
Yes.
But he's like, I want to expose this prison to the world. And to me, I feel like maybe he got the order of operations a little messed up. Yeah. Like, I need to get out so I can tell everybody about this place. Mm-hmm. But first, I'm going to shoot someone very publicly in the military and then go to the place.
I think, but to me, the way I read it was mm-hmm. he wants to tell the world about what happened in Benghazi.
Yes.
Cause, oh, okay.
Because he shoots his commanding officer, and I'm glad you brought that up. That is a great opening shot. Really so well cool. composed.
Yeah,
With the three guys standing on a podium or dais or whatever mm-hmm. you call it, and but he wants to. My understanding was he wants to get out and tell the world about the massacre in Benghazi yes. that he. He commanded a helicopter strike, and they killed a whole bunch of women and children, and then they covered it up and made it sound like it was a bunch of terrorists or whatever. So then he doesn't feel bad about shooting his commanding officer, but he feels he has PTSD throughout the movie, flashbacks of all these women and children dying. So my understanding was he wants to get out and tell the world about that, and then to boot, tell them about this prison, but not to poke holes, but... But at your trial that sent you to the Supermax prison in the first place, why didn't you tell anybody then?
Got to bring it up. Before they disappear you, you should tell someone, a reporter, anyone. Get in touch.
Also, guys, there's this big secret island prison. Get him out of here. This guy's talking crazy.
Get out of here. Go. Go. I was going to mention this earlier. We're talking about, you know, there's a little bit of plot holes and stuff like that and things of that nature. And the like, clearly this kind of like push and pull on the directing side of things. I think it is worth noting that this is the writers. It was a team. It is their first movie. And it mm-hmm. is, I believe, their only film. Mm. Their only writing credit beyond the adaptation of the film to a Sega Genesis game, which I would love to play.
I bet it would make a killer Sega game.
But it's like you said, it does read a little like you're like, this does kind of feel like someone's kind of first movie, and it's like a little it's like all these great ideas and like a little it just doesn't quite all zip together,
you know. But what though, it's if its reach exceeds its grasp, I give credit to that. It's two gentlemen named Michael Galen and Joel Gross, based on a book by Richard Hurley, mm-hmm. and I think it's, and by the way, the other thing that drives all of us writers nuts is there is an assumption, and by the way, I've been guilty of this untold times in mm-hmm. my career of watching movies and judging them. You know, not publicly, but you know, we all make our judgments, and there is this thought: if there's any plot problems in the movie, it must have been the writer's fault. And movies, you know, it's amazing how many hands. You know, how many hands or, you know, sticky fingers or in the sticking their fingers in the pie there. Yeah. I mean, there's the director, there's the actors, and there's the studio, and there's stuff gets cut out of movies all the time.
Absolutely.
That writers say, that would have made sense if you left that in. Oh, we don't need that. You know?
Yeah.
So it's a group effort. It's always a group effort, movies Absolutely. And TV. And there might have been stuff in here. That would have, I don't know. I never read the script. I don't know.
Well, I'm sure there was a third movie.
It does feel like there was stuff cut out that maybe would have made it a little bit more cohesive from like kind of scene to scene. It definitely feels like it was missing that I'm sure came out in the edit or to make the time, or maybe they just didn't have the money to shoot it. And, you know, you just kind of make it work.
The studio could have, who knows? You just never know. But I wish these guys had written more because, there's a lot of good stuff and a lot of good dialogue in this thing.
Yeah, I mean, it also doesn't mean no more credits. Obviously, doesn't mean they weren't working and didn't have long careers. Like plenty of people write a lot and get paid and have lovely careers, and it, you know, things never see the light of day, which is frustrating. But
the movie I think that got cut in all the scenes, I think, would tell us more about the world at large, because that's where the future is and that's where it's expensive to shoot. Off the island.
Yes.
So what is the rest of the world at this point? Like, if we're having these giant industrial prisons,
is it
just like today? Is it modern day? Is it just like, you know,
just with fancier helmet, like dark helmets from Spaceballs?
At our fancy prison, we just have crazier armor, and everyone's going to get one of those mini nuke guns.
Don't use it.
Yeah.
But other than that and the crazy monorail, like everything seems fairly 2022.
I guess.
Like they did have that holographic head of the warden speaking to them.
Loved it.
They Zordon the warden right at the beginning.
Zordon warden.
Yeah. Zordon warden. And then like the future tech kind of goes away entirely outside of the rocket gun, which becomes a pivotal point at the end of the movie. But
hilarious.
Is like in the future cell before he goes to the island, they talk about DNA scans that reveal your pathological aversion to authority.
I loved it.
Which is awesome. But like, what else can you learn?
What are the markers?
What are the markers? What else can you learn about somebody if you can get down to the point of, I know you have a pathological aversion to authority.
Yeah.
I know you love vanilla.
I know you're going to chew loud.
I know you eat with your mouth open. It's just they have,
I know you're gonna be an asshole about directions. I know.
Like just tiny little glimpses of the future that exists outside of this place, like their lashes when they are trying to punish the prisoner
with the fork.
It's like a cattle prod
prong.
It's 100% a prop master was like, it's good enough.
So I'm with you. I forgot about the spaceball helmets.
They're so good though.
Yeah, they look great.
They look so much more imposing.
They do. Well, they make your head bigger.
Everyone knows the most important.
Brains and brawn. Yeah.
The most imposing part of a person is the size of their head.
Then I'm very intimidating.
I gotta say too, I get hung up on that RPG, that rocket gun. It's a one shot. It shoots one shot.
Yeah.
It blows up everything within like a mile radius. So it's like, why would you have that in an enclosed prison?
I don't know.
Why do you point it at somebody right in front of you?
I can't tell you. So I watched it solo the first time I watched it. And then last night I watched it with a couple people. And that moment plays good. When it blows, that huge explosion is so shocking. It's amazing. Like it like elicits a squeal and then a laugh, and it's so good. Like, it's perfect.
That's what you've been pointing at me?
No notes. I understand why they were upset. I understand why they were afraid of it for so long. You're like, yeah, it's gonna fuck people up.
You pointed that at someone 5 feet from you? What were you doing?
Yeah, he's scary as a death wish. He doesn't want to keep going. He's daring people to have him pull the trigger.
Well, you know, When I first see it, because it's kind of like this snub-nosed, like there's a big circular thing.
It's a cartoon rocket.
Yeah, but you don't know what you're looking at first. What I thought it was like an energy gun that shot out
sound wave
gun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was like you pull the trigger and it emanates from that circle.
Yeah.
And then at the end, when they like pull a bait and switch of the insiders all leave the compound so that the outsiders flood in and they're like, there's no one here.
Yeah.
Ray Liotta pops up with the thing and shoots the gun.
Yeah.
I was like, what? Like, I couldn't believe that.
I love it.
That was Chekhov's mini nuke.
Yeah.
The entire movie. And I like reacted and then went to tell Kim, who was like made a big thing about wanting to watch this movie with me, just completely asleep. Just passed out. Like Kim for multiple weeks was like, I can't wait to watch that movie with you. And then like 40 minutes in, just
I don't understand that.
I told her I was gonna drag her publicly on the show, and she's like,
Holly would have done that too. That's why I didn't bother showing it to her. That scene, now that you say that scene is like the best scene in the movie, the Green Berets. That's John Wayne and all the Green Berets leave the fort. And the Viet Cong come into the fort, and then they have this AC-130 gunship orbiting overhead, and they massacre everybody with this mini guns. And they're just like, it's the same scene, kind of.
Yeah.
Except, you know, except with the one gun. Yeah.
Except the one person they didn't kill, which was the person they were aiming at, which was Merrick.
He's so powerful.
Is still alive and alive enough to fatally wound stab father before he is Mortal Kombat fatality'd onto a spike in
the last 5 minutes of this movie go so hard.
It's yeah. so great. It and he good. Gets it bad. I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Murdered.
Face down into a water on a spike through the stomach.
Unnecessary.
I think, yeah. It gets very violent at the end. But yeah. The twist that kind of brings this whole thing together is that King, the guy who makes the fancy rugs,
yes,
is a sort of insider spy for Warden and is feeding him, yeah, for some reason, feeding him information. So Warden, as he knows that there's this war that's breaking out on the island, decides he needs to go.
I think it's also, I think his main motive is that it's such a big ordeal and explosion that someone else in the world will pick up on it.
Right.
And they reveal the location.
They keep talking about the heat signature, yeah. like keeping the heat signature of the island low enough so that it doesn't get picked up on. I guess that is also pointing at some sort of high level global surveillance of.
Yeah, I think everyone has satellites in this future. I think that at the very least in 2022, everyone has satellites.
Yeah, so he's
George Clooney has a satellite.
What?
So, see, now if that's the case, then that's if real. Everyone has satellite access,
yeah.
So you picture a husband and wife in like Boston somewhere saying,
absolutely.
Hey, you remember that Club Med we went to 12 years ago? God, we had a good time.
Is that
there.
Still open?
They put the little magnolia blossoms on the pillow. Remember all? Let's look that up on the satellite. What yeah. the what? There's a what, prison. What?
I like the idea that maybe they get to book a flight there, and they're like, no, it's Mad Max. We just wanted dogs, towels folded like dogs, and mints on the pillow.
That's a really good point. I hadn't thought of that. Why would you put it on an island where people okay. had visited?
So this is my yeah. other. So, okay. My main issue with the monorail at the beginning
uh-huh.
is, for me, the color, the
Mars?
Look of that prison, everything about it, for me, 100% that is telegraphing, like, post-apocalyptic, like, it looks like a Fallout game, or, like, something like that. You know what I mean? And I was like, ah, this is a war-torn world, whatever. And then it doesn't feel like that's what it is at all.
Yeah, well, it's because they sent you to the non-future part. They sent you to the island.
Yeah.
So there's future happening.
But I guess you're assuming the island got destroyed. But that's the other, I don't know. I guess it's just an island that closed down.
It does seem like some high-dollar real estate if it formerly
it
had.
Does.
Yeah.
Like, by the way, I want to see the Mike White remake this as like the next season of The White Lotus.
It just goes full post-apocalypse. That would be so good.
You got to bring Jennifer Coolidge back. She's back.
She's Merrick.
She could have a fence through her nose. Like, Merrick, she could be the new Merrick. With the
yeah. Oh, my God. Please
make
this.
The White Lotus Island is now a prison. What are we going to do?
All right, let's call Mike White.
That's a really good idea.
You know, but it's like, it's funny. I never got that it was post- I mean, yes, that desert, the monorail yep. goes through. Look, but that could just be some wasteland. I mean, that yep. could be with a red filter. That could be the between Needles and Barstow. You know.
Oh, sure.
Right,
yes.
Right today. You yeah. know? But yeah.
we're
but
sure I, it wasn't it, Mars.
Yeah.
100% certain it's not Mars. Okay.
But it's not post-apocalyptic if they're worried about the rule of law.
People yeah. finding
out,
it,
you know.
What,
yeah, so
yeah. I guess I post-apocalyptic may not even be the right word. I guess is it like war torn? Is it just? Do you know what it looked like to me? You said wasteland. It looked like where the Stallone Judge Dredd when he gets sent yeah. out. I'm like, ah, yes, wasteland. Like
so. There's
you know.
There's pockets of civilization still, but it's not as we know it.
I
now.
Feel like the movie is just saying it's normal. And they,
I think
it's just what it is. I think we just are all living through, we're post-pandemic. Like, that's just still, everything happened normal. It's just there are future monorails and a secret island.
Well, one of the last questions that I have then for this future prison
yes.
is, if you knew that there was a island
yeah.
that you could be sent to where you would not come back from and that there was no escape from.
Yeah.
Would this be an active deterrent? Would this actually work if people knew that this prison island exists in this future? Like, he wants to keep it secret, but would you be yeah. like, ooh, I think twice about doing that crime?
Like a white collar crime?
Yeah. Will they send you for white collar? I don't know.
I don't think so. I hope not.
So you think it wouldn't make a difference because the people doing the crimes?
I think your average person is not going out to murder people. Now, if they were like, we will send you to the island for tax fraud, then it's like, maybe embezzlement. Okay, I'll think twice. I don't want to be on the island.
Yeah.
So these are good questions. If they knew how nice the woven rugs were and the pottery and stuff like that.
And the longer they're there, the nicer they're going to get.
Then it's worthwhile.
I don't know that the threat of punishment affects that many criminals, because I think part of being a criminal is you're not thinking, I don't know that you're doing some cost-benefit analysis. You're just like, you see some shit you wanted, you grab it. You know, you grab someone, you do whatever. Yeah. You're not thinking that far ahead.
Well, it's either you're not thinking about it, or you know, or there's a good reason you're doing it. You know, there's not like sometimes you just don't have a choice. That happens.
Do you think if this was televised, like it should be, it would make more people be criminals?
Oh, I'd try to get on the island.
Yes, so I'm saying
Absalom
people, absolutely.
Keep the Fox Network in business.
It is a Fox show. You're 100% right.
Absolutely. 3 days a week.
100%. 3 days a week. Absalom. 9 p.m. Yeah. Fox.
I say that Thursdays. With love. They sent me paychecks for 7 years straight. When I worked on the X-Files, so hey. I say that with love.
Hey, they'd be lucky to have it. I think it would be a banger.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Truman Island of Absalom. I think they'd be lucky. Does that cover up most of our...
I think that's pretty good. I think we've covered this future / low-tech island pretty well.
The 5 minutes of future and then the implications. Oh, lastly. So I was kind of setting it up about the king being an insider for the warden. And the warden lands on the island.
Oh, yes.
And then they swarm the helicopter that the warden is in and use the helicopter to escape.
Yes.
Now, we've seen the island on a radar.
Yes.
That is kind of just out in the middle of nowhere. Yes. There's a little couple other pieces of land next to it. But, like, are they actually safe? Are they actually saved now? Because I feel like the helicopter had to take the warden there. The helicopter picks them up. They leave. He knows how to drive a helicopter now.
Yes.
And they're going to go tell everyone about it. But how... realistically
they're shot out of the air.
Are they going to get very far out of half a helicopter tank of gas and with all the security that surrounds this island? We cut 5 minutes early.
That is a very astute helicopter question. That is something I could actually speak to, because that was one of my favorite parts of the movie, were the Kamov helicopters, the coaxial rotor helicopters.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, that would be my only chance, by the way, if I was being dropped off here, if I could somehow overpower everyone on board, I could actually fly that thing.
There you go.
I love that. Yeah, good.
Yeah, but that'd be my only chance. But this is a very good point. They have that helicopter. They say they're 200 miles off the coast of wherever they are, whatever coast. And I don't know if you had a full, if they came from some, they had those ship or something. Carriers. Sort of helicopter carriers, 50 miles off the coast.
Yes.
You could make it back to one of those, but then what happens when you land on that thing? But if they wouldn't necessarily know the helicopter had been taken over. Because Ray Liotta, they do set that up. He was the leader of a helicopter attack squadron.
Right.
So they make that part clear. But you might be able to make it. You know, you could probably make it. It depends on how much fuel you had in it. You know, you could make it 200 miles in a helicopter, but it depends on how much fuel you're starting with. But helicopters of the future. I'm sorry. Cut all this shit out of the thing.
No. This is what we want.
I completely nerd out. It's the only thing interesting about me is that I know about helicopters.
I'm seriously curious, because like I feel like if we stuck with the movie for 10 more minutes, we just see them crash into the Pacific and the movie's over. Like it's played as they got away. They're gonna expose the island. They're gonna expose the Benghazi incident and all this stuff, but they're in the middle of nowhere in a helicopter full of criminals.
Yeah.
I feel like they just like,
it's fine. You go and you crash directly into a TV studio.
Well, yeah. What you do is you crash directly into another island, and then the sequel starts.
A worse island.
Yeah. Where there's dinosaurs now.
Ooh, Congo.
Ooh, yeah.
We have highly intelligent apes.
Yeah. The movie didn't seem finished. It seemed like we could send them off into the sunset, but I feel like they definitely didn't get away, but maybe I'm just being pessimistic.
Nah, you're right. They probably, they're probably not going to get away. That's true. But yeah,
they're going to send them back. No escape again.
No escaper.
That's right. So is there anything from this future that we'd want to bring into our timeline? I mean, aside from cool handheld rocket guns.
I'd want to crack and fly in this helicopter. Yeah.
Okay.
I like this. That's my favorite thing is the helicopter.
What kind of helicopter is that, Vince?
It's Russian. It's a Russian Kamov. I think it's a Ka-27. And it is, I've never flown one, but they, the Russians make them. Russians make some pretty interesting helicopters, actually.
Yeah.
And this one has a coaxial rotor system, so it doesn't need a tail rotor. So this Kamov can lift a shit ton of weight because you're not bleeding off this, you're not wasting energy out to the side. So that's the point of that.
So it's more of like a big transport helicopter.
I think they use it for like anti-submarine stuff, all kinds of stuff. But it's
and transporting one prisoner at a time.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
it's perfect for that. You just heard it. You get so much lift. It's efficient.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I think that's going to do it for our foray into No Escape.
Yes.
Kyle, do you want to run through the social stuff?
Oh, yeah. You can follow us on all the relevant socials at Yes Tom Today. You can, of course, also join our Patreon at patreon.com/...
Hey guys, Joey from the future here. Just a quick update. We have decided since we recorded this episode to combine Kyle and I's podcast Patreons. So you can find all the bonus content for season 2 of Yesterday's Tomorrow Today over on the Patreon for our other podcast, LOLJK, which you can find over at patreon.com/LOLJK podcast. We'll have the bonus content for both LOLJK and Yesterday's Tomorrow Today season 2, all in one place, easier to manage. And we hope to see you there.
And of course, you get a bonus segment with every single episode. And I don't know if we've landed what it'll be for this one, but maybe we're talking about prison movies. Maybe we're talking about future prisons. I don't know. We'll see.
B movies in general, maybe.
Or maybe B movies in general. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see it. We'll feel it out.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Well, Vince, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been amazing. We really appreciate you doing that.
Yeah, thank you.
I had fun. I'm sorry I ruined the ending by talking nerding out on a bunch of
No, it's good.
I mean,
was
it,
like,
it...
I was a little voice in my head was saying, just shut the fuck up.
It sounds like we set you up.
Yeah, no.
That's what it sounds like. Is we were like, let's get him to talk about helicopters. Oh, yeah.
No, at the very end, I was just...
the movie?
Yeah. It was just it.
No, I was seriously wondering it as like credits were rolling. I'm like, they're not safe. Thank you again for listening. I've been Joey Reinisch.
I'm Kyle McVeigh.
And we will see you next time on Yesterday's Tomorrow Today.